Hello, Dave.
Yes, that's me.
Hi, how are you, Dave Perk?
Yes. I'm just sitting here going through some wood magazines here, and I woodwork them. Let me put them aside. War right. Story time.
Yeah. Got your list ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I had a question that you were saying that you talked to some officers. Have you talked to many drivers?
Yeah. Well, I've got a number of them lined up. Let me see what. I'm trying to think of who. Peter Stern, I believe, was a driver from the 50s, from the early 50s.
Yeah, did you ever see those cars?
I got a picture, I think, of something that looks like early, like a Ford or something.
Pretty old.
Yeah, I can imagine getting into too much.
I mean, it had to be an extra 3,000 or 4,000 pounds on those old cars versus the ones we had in the '60s.
Oh yeah, God. Yeah, it was. I'm sure it would have been fun to drive around out in the woods.
I was just curious if their stories were different between the officers and the enlisted, the drivers.
Yeah, I think. Trying to remember Al Tracy.
Yeah, he was a typing pool and tell analyst.
He was what?
Typing pool in the Berlin House.
Okay. Was he there during your time?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I've got an interview
with
him.
Make a note under Al. Ask him if we ever found out who the Phantom Pisser was.
The Phantom Pisser?
Yeah.
What? Tell me about that.
You'll have to call Stelly or Yusheko to confirm it. But when I first got there, they said, you got to be look out for the Phantom Pisser. What is this? And I guess Al got toasted one night, and his thing was beer and peanut butter.
Uh-huh.
He still eats it and drinks beer and peanut butter. Anyway, one night he had to drink beer, you got to go pee. So he got up, peed, and got all turned around, kind of half asleep, and ended up being somebody's boot.
What, upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay. I made a note in his file. So I may rub his nose in it a little bit if we get a chance to talk again. I gotta try and get in touch with Stelly. I'm going to talk to Stegner next week. I think he was from your time.
Yes, yeah.
And who else would you recommend?
Stanbridge.
Let me make a note here.
Lyndall Stanbridge. He was the air team driver.
STAN. I'm not showing him up in my database. Would it be STAND?
Yeah.
Nothing.
I'll send you the info.
Okay.
He was just Stegner just recently.
What's that? Hello?
Yeah, still there?
Yeah, you dropped out for a minute for some reason. You said Stegner, then that's all there was.
Oh, Stegner ran Stan down just like before Christmas, I think it was. So I can send you his information.
Yeah.
He might be a hesitant. I don't know what the situation is. He may be a little hesitant, but just tell him you only want to know about his driving thing out in the Air Force on the air team. So.
Yeah. Well, what I'm doing is, as I send these interview invitations out on email, I'm basically just telling them that, in fact, well, you got one, I think, that, we're not getting any younger, and it's important to preserve this information, and I'd like to invite everybody to tell their story, essentially.
Yeah.
No pressure, but here's your chance to put something down for posterity, if you're interested.
He said he was going to be at the reunion in August, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you would send me an email and just with any contacts of people you think would be interesting to talk to, I'd appreciate it. Because I'm going to break these things down into decades, so there will be an audio CD set for the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, rather than have, and then people can get what they want to hear, what part of history they want to listen to, or they can get the whole set if they want.
Yeah.
But, you know, rather than, you know, because I don't know how many CDs we're going to end up with, you know, as far as having an unedited conversation.
Oh my God.
But there could be a lot, and some people may not want the whole history. They may want just,
well, I hope I hope they are. Some edited. I'm going to have to change my tune here.
Yeah. Well, no, there's, you know, yeah, there, I'm just basically going to put down the pertinent information. I mean, we're sitting here talking. This stuff isn't going to go on them, you know. But,
oh, yeah, yeah. But personality conflicts and stuff shouldn't. I don't know.
I really haven't heard too much that you've said that would be insulting to anybody, I don't think. I mean, to call, you know, to refer to somebody as kind of a hard ass for an officer is, I think a lot of people are going to say that if that's what they feel.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I can still, you know, I mean, if I'll figure something out to
yeah, you'll go through it. You don't want to create any problems.
Right, right. I wouldn't want to, if there's something that sounds insulting to somebody, I certainly wouldn't want to put that in there. But the heavily edited stuff is just going to be, you know, little excerpts from these things that'll go into the DVD, because, you know, if you take 5 or 10 or minutes out from each person, if they've got, you know, an interesting story they're telling, and you get, you know, 30 people that have a 10-minute story, that's 300 minutes, you know, that's 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you can only put a couple hours on a DVD. You know, I've got the video that I've got is 30 minutes, and I figure...
Have you got the video of the... that I have on the internet site?
On my site?
No, on the mission site.
What?
I sent them in a movie. I made a movie driving from Potsdam.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, I was playing with that today. I was colorizing some stuff.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that it had some pretty wild colors, and I kind of did like a grayish blue... and changed the look of it so it looks just kind of like an old movie, but not an old color movie.
It's got the crossing at the Glenica Brook.
Right.
And then the tail cars go by.
Yep, yep. Yeah, I've got all
that. I've also got a movie of the East German Memorial Guards in East Berlin changing.
Uh-huh.
And then I've got film at Eagle's Nest. I'll just send you the CD. Why don't I do that?
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah.
And then
you never know what
the East German border guards, but memorial guards, when they change, they do the big goose step thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to see.
Yeah. I'll throw the movie that you did up on my website and send you a link to it, and you can download it and see the difference, the way it looks now. I was fooling with it this afternoon and basically just, you know, rendered out a different version of it. There's no audio to it. It's just, you know.
Yeah, it needed something because the film was, you know, I've never even thought about the film, you know, deteriorating.
Yeah.
I just heard something, too. Well, never going to get through this thing, but real quick, they're saying the CDs, music and the things that people are putting on CDs now will eventually in about 20 years dissipate.
Well, I've heard different things. DVDs are supposed to last around 100 years.
That's what I heard too.
You know, and I think it probably depends on the quality of the CD, but once it's on CD and it's digital, there's going to be new media that's going to come along.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be probably easy to transfer those onto whatever the new sort, you know, whether it's going to be a flash. I think that's what everybody's going to, is just straight out, you know, a flash storage, which is like on a chip,
yeah.
You know, and where you're not even going to have anything moving, you know, where a DVD, you've got something spinning, you've got laser, you've got moving parts. And they're trying to get into solid state.
200 years from now, this generation is going to be so recorded.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to have any kind of question about what went on in society.
Right. You know, this YouTube and all this video stuff, everybody wants to be a star now, you know?
Yeah. I wish they'd ban the media from using YouTube and bloggers.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing. Everybody's got a, you know, everybody's got the capability of banning what they don't want to pay attention to nowadays.
Yeah.
You just hit the pause or delete or stop or whatever and go to the next. You know. So.
Do you want to get going on this?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
I'd love to talk to you because I find your generation versus mine fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, we can talk in the future. I mean, what I need to do is get you set up on Skype. You know, get it downloaded onto your computer so when you're online, I know, or you know when I'm online, and just click a button and say, hey, what's going on? You know, it's great.
SKIP?
SKYPE. I'll send you a link. And it's a free download. The only thing that you need to use, you have to have a microphone. So what I recommend everybody get a headset with a mic built in.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's what I do.
It's USB. You know, you can pick them up for $20-$30 at Best Buy and different places. And once you got that set up, you're talking free anywhere in the world, computer to computer, for as long as you want.
That's cool.
Yeah. And if you want to talk to people on their landlines, you know, some people don't have unlimited long distance. With this thing, for $3 a month, you have unlimited long distance anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty, it's real, real affordable.
Yeah, I like that.
So I'll send you a link. Okay, what you got on your list? Where, I don't know where we left off, but.
Let's see, we left off at number 3, actually, sleeping in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I skipped, oh, yeah, I skipped down to these ammonia and the smokes.
Right.
I think it was, boy, you know, I wish I knew these officers. God damn. I think it was Colonel Coleman. Or Brownlee. Damn it. Anyway, we were coming back off a 2-day north of Pottstown, way up on Route 2, and we were just taking some country roads and just enjoying the drive. It was a beautiful spring day, you know, all that. And that was the thing about Colonel Coleman, you know, if the job was done and there was nothing really going on, then let's get off the highway and enjoy the country roads.
Mm-hmm. You never know what you're going to run into.
Well, that's where you're going to really find the stuff.
Right.
And also, you're just cruising along. I mean, I do that today. I hate taking the freeways. And that gets me in trouble because you were talking about grabbing the keys. If I get off on a nice country road and I'm cruising down the road, I'll have Paula yanking on my arm going, come back. Come back. You got to slow down now. Because it's so easy to get into that tour driver groove. You know, it's still there.
Yeah.
And I just love it. I just love taking the curves, and it's just like you're back.
Yeah.
Anyway, get down to the task at hand here. We're taking the country roads back, not doing anything. And out of the corner of our eyes, there's a forest over here, a big, huge open field, and cattle and all that. We catch some movement on the old forest road that runs along the field in the forest. And I slow down. The colonel looks over there, and there's a Soviet truck. He says, slow down. So we slow down, the truck comes towards us, and then turns left into the forest and disappears. He says, well, you know, let's go up here where we can see across, and we'll take a break. So I find a place, we're taking a break, and in about 15 minutes, another truck comes down the road, disappears into the forest. He's going, this is interesting. So we mount up, and he says, it's 15 minutes apart. Let's see if we can get in there, see what's in there, and come back out before the next one shows up. So we shoot on down the road, dirt road. And it's a pretty big, wide, fairly decent road. We come to the curve where they're turning into the forest, and now the trucks, when they turn on a dirt road, they'll dig the dirt up. Mm-hmm. And you can see there must have been a few dozen trucks turning there. We got something going here. So we backed off, and in about an hour, we counted another about five trucks maybe going in there. So then there was a break for about 30 minutes. So then we stuck our nose down the road where they were going, got down a couple hundred yards, and then right off to the right, they just drove off in the woods. No road, just drove off into the woods. And, you know, the flags go up. There's something out here. So we go on down the road and park in the woods and watch. And there's a couple more trucks turned down. And there's no insignia on these trucks at all. And a couple of them are pulling trailers. But there's nothing on there that identifies it for anything. And it's highly unusual. So we're... Yeah, there's always a unit recognition or symbol on the trucks, anyone, the vehicles. And these are the big what are the UAS 375s? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had those.
Right.
Yeah, you would have had those.
Yeah.
Bone vehicles. And so we sat there and watched them, and after another five or six, so we figured there'd got to be at least maybe two dozen vehicles back in there. So nothing happens for an hour. So we come out, we sit down, and he says, what do you think about the road? And I look, and at the road, we can get down there. And the road goes in about 100 feet, and it makes a blind right-hand turn because there's a knoll right there. And they just made their own road. And we're going in there and, you know, slip-sliding around, flopping around. And I just get the front end of the car up to where we're going around the side of the blind turn, and I can lean forward a little bit, and I can see the gate down there. So that means a small section of the front of our left front of our vehicle is sticking out in the open, and they can see us. And some of the dirt gives way underneath us and slides us right into a rut. Oh, no. So he can't get out. I open the door. He crawls out his window. We get in the back, get the old winch out, and we're winching. It's quiet. We got blankets wrapped around the winch, so the click won't make any noise. We do a couple of winches. We run up there, and he looks. Nothing happening. We cut a couple of winches. We run up and look. Nothing happening. He said, the hell with it. It's just winch like hell, you know, because... And there have been trucks pouring in here. And now we're at least 30 minutes in this road. We're going, oh, my God, you know, we're working our butts off trying to get this damn car out of here. And you know what it's like to winch when you're center held up in the center crown.
Right.
Thanks for the, thank God for that steel plate. And we finally got winched out of there. So as I'm throwing, you know, not throwing, but putting things back in the back end, he grabs a camera, runs up, and takes pictures of it. He comes back with his big eyes. He says, it's nuclear. They've got nuke signs all over the place, the radiation signs.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, holy crap, this has never been seen before. So he comes back, throws on a telephoto lens, and I told him, if something happens, run over the hill, into the woods, back out to the road. Because I backed out to the road, turned around, and backed down.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody came in, I wouldn't be facing with my rear end and have to back up to him.
Right.
So he comes running down the road, and I went, oh, God, they've seen us. And he says, he had a telephoto on, and just, oh my God, he says, they got all kinds of trucks back there, all nuclear. They got guys walking around in rubber suits. I'm going, holy crap, this is a big deal. So we pull out of the road, and we go down about 100 feet, and he says, can you get back in there? So I look at the, sorry about it, I should have covered up the mic. There's a creek there, and it's small enough that I can straddle a creek, and there's not a lot of brush and trees along in there. So I drove off the road, and I'm going up this creek, following this creek up into the woods, and going around trees and brush and slamming into rocks and stuff. And he figures, all right, we're right about opposite. We're about, you know, maybe 100 feet past the gate. And we're stopped, and we got our windows down listening to, in case there's guards out on this little knoll here, because there's a little hill behind between us and them. And I'm sitting there in the car, and you know that sixth sense you develop.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting his cameras ready, and he's getting ready to get out of the car and go running up the hill and take photos. And I grab him, and I said, nah. And he looks at me, and he knows enough to say that, you know, if one of the drivers says there's something wrong, did you know, so he quietly shut the door, and he said, what's wrong? And I'm looking around, and I just know there's something wrong. This isn't right. So I put it in reverse, and as I look over my left shoulder to see what's on my left side to back up, 15 feet away is a saw sitting in the weeds, leaning against a tree, taking a crap. He's got his pants down. He doesn't have an AK. And you can see him wiping his ass as fast as he can wipe his ass.
Does he see you?
Yeah, he's staring right at me.
Okay, all right.
And he can't yell because he's got a magazine in his hand. And he's got to balance himself with one hand against the tree, rip the pages out, and wipe his ass with the pages from the magazine. So he can't let go of the magazine, and he can't let go to do anything. And we both just sat there and laughed our ass off. And I think the Colonel Coleman threw a butt of cigarettes over the car at him, and we backed out of there. And then all hell broke loose, because when we got out to the road, there was trucks all over everywhere. I mean, they were just pouring out down that road, so he must have gotten over the hill. And we got out of there by the skin of our teeth. But I can remember to this day, I turned to the left and looked right into this guy's eyes. Poor guy, I couldn't help but bust out laughing. He was embarrassed, but he knew the security, he knew what the situation was. Don't you love that stuff?
So what was this? Was this an installation, or was this just a temporary?
No, they were having, as near as we could tell, they were having field training for radiation. In case the, you know, they deploy to the field and handle all your radiation stuff. Possibly weapons. I have, you know damn good and well they don't have any nuclear weapons out there.
Right.
But they're doing their training and their, you know, it's all of that stuff, and it's, we've never seen that before.
Hmm. Interesting.
But, it's too bad we couldn't have gotten over that hill, because I think we would have really picked up some good stuff.
Yeah.
But, they were not happy. The one thing about the saw, if you get the scuds, the nuclear weapon stuff, they had the cream of the crop that were guarding that stuff. Those troops were intelligent. They were cream of the crop troops.
Yeah.
And they reacted immediately upon seeing you. And they weren't nice about it. Did you ever get into Goldberg?
It's not ringing a bell.
It's a an installation that was, as you drive along the side, I only got in there about five times, and that was probably four times too many. But as you drive along the road going west, they have these big netting, camouflage netting, raised up 25 feet, so you couldn't see inside. And we figured there were scuds and stuff in there. But nobody could ever get in and penetrate that that netting. I ran the whole thing, which was highly unusual, twice, without being attacked until I got down to the other end. And the other two times, as soon as we stepped on the road, come out of the woods, they were just all over us. They were really nasty. The troops were highly trained, highly motivated, and they knew exactly who we were and that we weren't supposed to be there, and to ram them. There was, before I got there, by 3 or 4 years before I got there, there was a big incident at the, let's just say the West End, where they got caught. They blockaded the thing, the gate, because you'd run the gate. And they blockaded it. They knew they were coming, and they blockaded the gate with trucks and BTR-40s and all this stuff. And the American officer was damn near got PNG'd. Mm. It was nasty. I was with Fiedler or DeSimone. We went up. Well, our sole target was at Goldberg. It had to be DeSimone because I think he was leaving. And our sole target for the 2-dayer was Goldberg. And, you know, if we picked up some stuff, good. But it was like we went up the opposite direction. And we stirred some stuff up so they'd know we were around there. And then we buried ourselves in the wood for a day and a half. And when we were driving around at night, we drove no lights. During the day, he'd be at about 100 feet, 150 feet. If we coming up on a road to go down and look around, see if there was anything there, then I'd come down to jump in, and we'd zip across. We were trying to stay headed to Goldberg, and we didn't want anybody to see us. And driving at night in the woods, you know what that's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But we were a good 50 miles away, and we did it. We got all the way over there at night, north of them, about 6 to 7 miles in the woods, and nobody had seen us. We wandered down through the woods during the day, starting about 3 or 4 of them, and we hit the road about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, and we started about 3, so that's how slow we went. And we were about 6 miles, because it was really a hot target. Nobody had seen us. Nobody. Any time we saw a house, a car, anybody, we'd stop and back up and go around instead of waiting for them to leave. We knew nobody had seen us. We got down through the woods, the little small woods there, and it was a paved road, main road that you wanted to get in on. We stopped there and we watched for traffic and listened. Nothing. And we figured that the change of guard had to be about 6 or 7 from the reports that he had. because they changed the guards at a different schedule than everybody else. You could pretty much say at 6 o'clock on some of the installations, the guards are going to be changed, and we'd hit them at 5:30 because the guards would be asleep. Mm-hmm. So we poked our nose out on the road, or he walked out on the road, nothing, got back in the car, and we bundled everything up. He got his camera ready, and I put blankets on everything because, you know, we knew it was going to be hot, and kind of battened everything down so nothing would be flying around to hurt anybody, and poked the front end of the car out on the road, nothing, pulled out on the road, turned west, a right turn, maybe gone 20 or 30 feet, and a 375 came around the corner at about a quarter mile away, if that far, maybe 150 yards, actually, because it was easily recognizable, and they could see the two guys in the cab. And they immediately slammed the brakes on and turned sideways in the road, and then they straightened it out and came after us. Son of a bitch. All that work.
Oh, yeah.
All that work for nothing. We disappeared.
Sometimes you get some, sometimes you don't.
Yeah, sometimes you get the bear, and sometimes the bear gets you.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. One time I was out with Rogers, and I came across some T-55s, I think it were. It was the T-54s and T-55s. I think those were the tanks I had. I don't recall. I think that's... I don't know if you still have them out there or not.
Very rare. T-62s were pretty much what we would run into during my stint there. There were some older tanks, but...
Some older tanks, yeah. I got to see a bunch of the T-34s.
Boy, that's real old.
World War II? Yeah, I got to see a bunch of those running around.
Huh.
But I think they were T-54, T-55s. And they were parked right alongside a railroad, right at the over, where you drive up over the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way out in the woods, and there was no schlagbaum control. But they were parked low, kind of hiding, but the barrels were just over the top of the railroad. Rogers got out to run around behind them because they had a fire going down there, I think. Yeah, there was a little fire going down there, and they were out training at night, and it was cold, so they had a fire. Well, he got out. I ran over to one of them because we were talking about are they changing the barrels from rifle barrel to slick barrel, because that would say that they have fin-stabilized rounds, which are highly, much more accurate, highly accurate than the rifle barrel. So I jumped up in the barrel, threw my arm over it, tried to slide my arm down the barrel, and I could hear him come running back, and I never really fully got my arm down there. He's going, motherfucker! I wanted to pull that one off, but I never got to it, but, yeah.
Hmm.
We got, we had an APC BTRP-40s, or BTR-40s.
Mm-hmm.
You have any of those? I think they were bringing in the
60s. Is what, 60s, that's all I remember seeing is 60s. But yeah, they could get down and dirty in the back 40. They were coming
the
after
BTRs,
you.
When you get out in the woods, you had to have solid ground if you wanted to outrun those suckers.
Yeah, and they go right over top of you.
Oh yeah,
shut you down.
We had one come at us at the front, and I just couldn't get anywhere in the sand. And he came roaring up, hit the brakes, and he just tapped the front end of the car. Didn't even dent anything. And it was enough to knock me out of the sand hole that I was in. And I was able to get out and take off. It was just luck. Don Thomas had a BTR-60P, BTR-60s, that big sloping front.
Right.
It came right down in front of him and drove it right up on the car and drove the car down to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, well, I think we're going to be clobbered here. He's supposed to have, I thought he had some pictures of it, but I don't know. Then we had the bakery. Did you ever get over to the bakery where they supplied us with bread?
No.
Yeah,
but I love the bread.
Oh, cool.
I love that. Those little brochins for breakfast were excellent.
We
got the brown bread or whatever it was they made sandwiches with. That was nasty. I used to just throw the bread away and eat the speck or whatever.
It was the Russian.
It was it was real, but the brochin was excellent.
Oh, yeah. The brochins were great. We had when I was there, you had to be careful because you had to open it up. You couldn't bite into it.
Right.
Because you'd find bugs.
Oh, well, I remember their little, I don't remember that, but.
I found one, and I was telling Epic, I said, you know, what the hell is this? And he says, you got to come with me to the bakery, because everybody had to take their turn making a bakery run, and I hadn't been there. So he took me over there, and you walk in the back, you walk down these little stairs, and the place has got water all over the floor and all the flour and cockroaches everywhere. Unbelievable. And they just never cleaned it up.
Hmm.
Never cleaned it, never washed anything. It was, and that was the best bakery in Potsdam, I think. That's why we were going there. I remember some kuchen. They made great kuchen.
Uh-huh.
But you just never took anything from them and ate it. You had to open it up. The little Boucher rolls. Yeah, they were wonderful.
Yeah, I've never found any quite like them.
No.
Stateside, even though, you know, they're European bakeries, but they just don't taste the same.
No, uh-uh. No, they're just something different that they used.
Maybe it was the bugs. Maybe bug trailings or droppings. Who knows? Don't want to know. All I know is it was good.
It was, fresh. What is it? Organic flour and fresh protein. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Exactly.
Do you ever cook out there in the field?
No, we always, you know, it was just a box lunch type of thing. Very, you know, it's very repetitive, always the same. I don't remember ever building a fire. You know, we had coffee in thermoses and we'd eat cold sandwiches. It was just, you know, and once in a while we'd hit a restaurant. You know, if we wanted a warm meal, we'd go into a restaurant somewhere. I know, I remember Pat Brosnahan, who's no longer with us, enjoyed going into places, you know, and kind of waving the flag. He was that kind of guy, officer.
But, yeah, it's true. We didn't. I hit a bakery once up out of Prenzlau early in the morning and walked back in there because we were wanting something decent because the Keistas, it was girls. I mean, we never told the girls. I mean, they're busting their butts in the commie outfit, and they were always on our side. We never told them that we threw the Keistas out.
Yeah. Well, like I said, the meat, the speck was okay, and I don't know what you were getting, but the Saz would bring us filet mignon. I mean, it was the tenderloin of the beef. And,
already cut?
Yeah. And so we would, that and mushrooms was a standard fare. Schnitzel was standard fare. I can't really remember.
Good God, you got schnitzel?
Oh, yeah, quite often they made schnitzel.
Oh,
so
man.
I don't know if it was veal or pork, you know. I think it was probably pork.
Big bunch of
pussies. But yeah, that was pretty much the meal, you know. It was one or the other, and then the breakfast we'd have these huge, we'd call them farmer's omelets with just about everything in them. You know.
Good God.
But the Keistas were that terrible Russian bread with kind of like Swiss cheese. The cheese had holes in it, I remember, and the speck was just, you know, or once in a while we'd take a, you know, have them slice up some of that tenderloin that was already cooked and make sandwiches out of that.
You knew Dagmar, didn't you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dagmar, she's the one who supplied me with the belts, the Russian belts in bulk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she did. She went to prison. I heard for quite some time. Her husband was involved in some type of car part thing going on over there. I don't really have the details, but I know he got locked up for a long time, and she did some prison too after I left.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she didn't come back to the house then, huh?
I doubt it. But I know she went to the last reunion. I've got pictures of her. I could email you some pictures.
I remember that's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I like Dagmar. She was nice. She was the head of the kitchen.
Well, the meat they brought us, they'd bring it once a month. They'd bring in a whole side of beef with a tail on.
Hmm.
And then we'd just give it to the women. Here, you take it. And they would just went nuts with it. They'd cut it all out and they'd all split it up with each other and take it home. We never ate it. We couldn't.
Huh.
We never had it. We never ate any of the dairy product. They said that the medical team from the hospital would come out once a year. They'd get passes from the Russians, and they'd take samples of everything. And they never told us that they found anything, but they always told us don't eat the dairy.
Hmm. Well, that wasn't an issue when I was there. I remember, although I don't remember drinking milk, but I remember we got orange juice from them. We got the tenderloin. I remember them making dumplings.
Wow, geez, you guys look like kings.
It was okay.
We had to shop for our stuff. We'd go into the PX once a week.
Hmm.
We'd get milk, dairy products. We'd get lunch meats. We wouldn't eat any of the lunch meat that they brought in. Some bread, orange juice, and fruit juices and stuff like that. I mean, they'd bring in, you can love this one, they brought in these gallon jugs of Bulgarian peas.
Oh.
My God. One of the guys was saying, here, have a pea. He picked it up and threw it at me. And it went funk right in my hand. It was hard as a rock. He threw another one at me, and I jumped out of the way, and it broke. I swear to God, it broke a little window on the kitchen.
They were dried peas then. They probably need to be constituted.
They were hard as rocks. They had to boil them for an hour.
Mm.
Never seen anything like it in my life. They were green. They tasted great. I hate peas, but they were good.
Yeah, I hate peas too. Or used to.
Well, you're a good man then.
Yep, never liked them. I'll eat them if they're in something like a pot pie or whatever. Where you don't want to pick them out, but I wouldn't eat them as a side dish.
No, never
liked them.
Yeah, well, I brought that up because I got tired of the garbage, and nobody wanted to stop someplace at a decent restaurant out there and get something to eat to take with us, because we're going to be found. We can never get lost again. So I got a sterno can, the little sterno cans.
Mm-hmm.
And then the PX, I'd buy chili and Denny Moore stew and soup and stuff like that. And then crank up the sterno. I've got a picture here someplace of a can of beans sitting on a little sterno can sitting on the back part of the car, heating up, and I'd eat those with some bread. And if it was raining and you're sitting on an OP, you got the little sterno on the floor between you, your legs down underneath the steering wheel, and you're cooking dinner.
Huh. Never did that.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't stop to go get something to eat.
I don't remember ever taking any food out to the house. It was just, eat the stuff that they had. I guess we weren't thinking that far ahead, or else it was good enough not to bring anything else. But it was just.
If we had quiches for two or three days, we'd drive through the forest. As soon as we got into the forest, and start tossing the
The speck, which was, it was really a high quality smoked ham, almost like prosciutto, didn't have quite the deep rich flavor that prosciutto does, but it looked like it, and that's kind of what they'd bring us slabs of those, and that's what they'd make sandwiches up or put it in omelets for breakfast.
They'd bring in ham. I remember the ham, but we'd make them cook it before they'd serve it to us. It's already cooked. Cook it again. Nobody trusted it.
Your contact, Stephen V. Hoyt, is available.
Nobody really trusted it. When the medical team comes out and does a survey and say, well, we don't find anything, but don't eat it. Come on.
Yeah, that would scare you a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, things must have changed.
You what?
I say things must have changed when.
Oh, they had to.
By the time I got there, it just, I remember the Serb lieutenant would, seems like once, I don't know if it was every 2 weeks or every month, they'd bring the, bring all the stuff out in a Jeep or UAZ and bring it into the kitchen. And, the meat was real, it was lean, it was just tenderloin, there was very little fat in it. It was, You know, I mean, it wasn't nice like nice ribeye steaks, but it was tender enough, you know, and they cooked it. And
already cut and wrapped.
It was, the tenderloin was already cut and wrapped. Yeah, wrapped in wax, green wax paper.
Yeah.
Or not wax, but it was like the butcher paper. I remember butcher it was paper, green. Yeah.
No, they just bring in a slab of beef, a slab of beef, a half of it with a tail on it. Sometimes you'd have hair all over it, and they'd have to clean the hair off.
Yeah.
If you ever talked to Greenwald, one of the high speed chases we got into was with him. We were way up on Route 2. And he was still kind of in the mindset that, you know, if we're not doing anything wrong, then they're not going to mess with us. So don't speed and signal and all this garbage. And he came out of the woods on one of the side roads, came out on Route 2 and was headed south in the old Chevy convertible.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that one?
No. I can't imagine. Who had the convertible?
We called the guy Schneider, the driver of this, the Narcs.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures you sent, but I don't ever recall seeing anything like that on the road. It was mostly BMWs or Mercedes.
Yeah, they finally.
Or Trabants, even. I mean, they drove Trabants. Or Wartburgs, not Trabants. Wartburgs.
The Wartburgs, yeah. Wartburgs is what we call them.
Yeah.
But, he came up behind us, and I told Greenwald, I said, you know, he wants around. He says, we haven't done anything. Let him go around. I said, if he goes around, it's going to be a fight. He says, we haven't done anything, you know, Sergeant, you know, and all this stuff. And I said, okay. So he pulled around. Sure enough, he pulled out in front of him and slammed his brakes on. And Greenwald was all, well, what'd you do? You know, hey, I told you. And he kept slamming the brakes on. So I kept getting closer, and I'd run up to him and stop, run up to him. Then I ran up and tapped his bumper, and that upset him. I'd get them all pissed off. They were both shaking their fist at us, and two of them in the car. Greenwald finally, he buckled himself down tight and said, okay, take me home. So he slammed his brakes on. I pulled up right up, just tapped his bumper. And while I was coasting up to tap the bumper, I put it in reverse. And just was ready to go. And as soon as I saw his hand, I started backing up a little bit. And as soon as I saw his hand go into reverse, I dropped it in first and popped around him. And he was beating on the steering wheel, flipping us off. And they were both beating on the dash. I got him. And then you know what Route 2 was like. That was two lanes of cobblestone, dirt, and trees. There was nowhere to run, nowhere to fight. And we had to get down to the bridge, down around, I forgot where it was, but there was a little narrow bridge on Route 2 coming down from Ludwigslust. That once you got beyond that bridge, yeah, that's right, because it was a lot of PRAs on both sides, and you really couldn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And once you got past that bridge, then it opened up, and you could dive into the woods and into the fields and stuff. But once I got around him, he came up, and he was trying to get around me, and Schneider was a festive, feisty little son of a bitch. You see him, and you know you're going to have a fight on your hands, which was okay with me. I loved it. So the only way to get away is we hit high speed and going down, you know, what those high crown cobblestone roads are like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Route 2 had changed when you were there, but it was a son of a bitch. And, he kept trying to get around us, and I kept stopping him. And there's traffic going both ways because it's the major north access route from Hamburg to Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all this traffic going through there, and I'm fighting through all the traffic and the trucks. And he's trying to get around me and trying to cut me off, and I get around him. So I finally got all the way over to the left side of the oncoming traffic and was able to, because he got... he got caught behind a couple of rigs and a big line of about 10, 12 cars coming north, and we were going south. So I shot on down the side, bounced all over the place, and I think I clipped, if I remember right, I think I may have bounced up against a tree going down through there. Got back on our road and kicked it in the ass. And a few minutes, he was up, you know, another 3 or 4 miles down the road. He was back on us. And it was a fight all the way back down to Potsdam. I think we were probably about 5 or 6 miles south of Ludwigslust when we came out on Route 2. And it was a fight all the way back down to Potsdam. And Greenwald couldn't understand it. And I kept telling him, this guy's an asshole. You see him, get ready for a fight. So we pulled into Potsdam, and he told him about it and said, we'll go into Berlin, have lunch. Maybe they'll cool down, then we'll come back out and finish our tour. So we did that. We go into Berlin, told them what had happened, and everybody's going, we had lunch. We go back out, and we come across the Gerdeke Brook, the bridge, went through Potsdam and hit the road on the going out to the Autobahn, Route 2 south. Got on the Autobahn. We're heading down the Autobahn. Didn't see anybody, so I picked it up. And there's a Volvo guard shack going east on the Autobahn.
Right.
So as we blew there, the Volvo wouldn't move out of the way. I didn't hit him, but I pulled over and gave him a couple of feet. He reached out with his wand, waving his wand up and down, and it hit the front window post and just shattered his wand all over the place.
Yeah, they were fiberglass. They were fiberglass. Plastic
at the time, yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked in the rearview mirror, and he's standing there shaking his hand. Dumb shit. So we blew on down the south ring, took the east ring going north towards Plensau, and didn't see any tail cars. And we pulled in, and I told Greenwell, I said, let's hide. And he said, no, we have nothing to hide about. He goes through this routine, and we haven't done anything wrong. They're not behind us, so they've let it go. And I said, God, I don't trust this. So we're sitting there having lunch, and sure as hell, the three BMWs, the Triumph, and the Chevy convertible go blowing by. And as soon as they saw us sitting up on this little park plots up in there, it was on a little bit of knoll. You could see all the brake lights and turning around, and I didn't even wait for him to say anything. I just turned the car on, jammed it in gear, took off, and cut down through the parking lots across the Autobahn and kicked it in the ass. And he had sandwich and soda all over him, I guess, if I remember right. And they come up on us and wolf packed us, what we call wolf pack when they were all on you. And it was a fight. There was one on each side of me. And they were trying to pin me in so they could slingshot the other guys around and block me in. The Chevy convertible was a little bit slower, and they had the white BMW 3200, and he was my nemesis. We always were going at it. And we got up to speeds where the Chevy came up, and it was two in the front, two in the right, left and right side of me, about even with the bumpers, two in the back of me, just behind the back end of the car, and the Chevy Impala right in the middle behind him. And then the white BMW 3200 behind him. And I swung to the left and drove him out because there was a car. We were coming up in a car on the Autobahn on the left lane. So I used that car to force him off the Autobahn into the center strip. I hit my brakes and drove the Chevy off to the left, off to the right, which drove the last BMW off my rear end. Then the other BMW tried to come up and take my left. And I swerved to him and then faked over to the right and drove that BMW on the right-hand side off the Autobahn down into a field and then came back at this other guy. And he was driving right next to me, and I looked right at him, flipped him off, and came right at him. And he backed off. And then I kicked it in the ass. And they could only do about 120 to 125. And I left them. The only thing left at 90 to 100, the Impala, I think it was 80 to 90, I think the Impala convertible, the Chevy, dropped off. Between 95 and 110, BMWs dropped off. And that's when the white BMW 3200 came up. And we were at 125 to 130 and fighting. He's trying to sideswipe me, trying to run me off the road, and I'm fighting against him. That was a hell of a long run. That was a nerve-wracking one. It was a hell of a good time.
I can't recall ever getting in any type of aggressive things with the narcs, with Stasi. They were, basically on our trying to tail us all the time, but we would just lose them. We wouldn't be in a very rarely in a situation where you were, you know, side by side or bumper to bumper or whatever. They just didn't have the horsepower, and it was just a matter of, you know, make them disappear.
Did you have the police interceptors?
Yeah, there were like four. We had 429s and 427s.
Yeah.
And
you just got two of those in when I left. I got to run one on one tour, and I God, that was fun. Oh, jeez, that was so good. It was just boom, gone. Mm-hmm. The only thing that then they brought the white BMW 3200, peaked out of the 125, 130, and then they brought in a Triumph. It was obviously bought in West Germany, and we researched that, and that'll do 140. And we didn't have anything to do that fast. So when you got with him, you know, you wanted to keep far enough away from that white, the 3200, that they couldn't team up on you. And then he couldn't really do anything to you because he was so much lighter. It was like a sports car.
Mm-hmm.
If you hiccup, he's gone. So he'd just stay with you on your tail. But it was... You know, it got to be so much that I became an adrenaline junkie, and if I didn't get in a fight with him on a tour, I felt the tour was a waste. Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, where are these guys at? What have I done? You know, because they'd come out all over you. I mean, they chase you all over the damn place, going down to Leipzig, Magdeburg on that long stretches. You just kick it in the ass and leave them behind. Especially because they had two 1600s, BMW 1600s, and two BMW 1800s. And they were both somewhere between 90 and 110, and they drop off. And then you just kick in the ass and leave them there. And you get far enough of them ahead that you could just duck off into the woods and just sit there for a while. And that's how we'd lose them. But this one with Greenwald, it was so nasty because we continued on down coming along the south ring. Get off, cat. Get off. Come down the east ring, and I think I did a three-quarter slide around that turn, coming from the east ring, transition to the south ring, heading to...
You're dropping out for some reason. I was having some trouble last night, too, online with bandwidth problems, and it would drop off. I don't know if you're still there. So, well, you got anything else? I've got another 50 minutes, and we had, I think, an hour yesterday, so I'm going to have to edit this down quite a bit. But
at the end of the chase, I took off the Autobahn, went off the dirt road, and went airborne off into a field, cut back, and drove off the white one, and he followed me. We played fender benders all the way in through Potsdam to the bridge, and he come up right up behind me at the bridge and into that one. That was a hairy one.
None of those cars were any good once they got off the road, were they?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you had decent road, they were okay. But no. Yeah, I got all kinds of G's. I got another 15, 20.
Give me the couple of the best ones. For now, anyway. We'll,
okay. Well, you get the idea of the chase, the high-speed chases and stuff we got into.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of Dresden, we were coming north. We pulled into a park plot for a cup of coffee. We're sitting there in Vopos on the other side, probably about 100 yards away. We're watching it with binoculars.
Right.
And, you know, we're getting ready to wrap it up and take off. And I said, well, let's see how friendly these guys are. So I got a Playboy out, another Playboy, stuck it out the window, stretched out the centerfold. These guys jumped back in their car, and they were behind us in a matter of seconds.
What, they following you because they wanted it, or
were no, they were mad? They were just spying on us. Well, you know, what are we doing? And, you know, as soon as I pulled the Playboy out, they didn't care about that. They just wanted to see the Playboy.
Okay.
So I put a couple out, some cigarettes and chocolate on the back of the car, and drove off because they wouldn't come up. And then as soon as I drove off, you could see him picking the stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Familiar with a honey wagon?
The crap wagon?
Yeah. Yeah, we had one of the guys where I got there plowed into one.
Oh.
and then I got caught in a big, nasty pool. It was with Bolte. And he told me to keep going. I told him, you don't want to. He says, no, it's not that deep. It's just a look at the walking back and forth in it. Well, it was about 2 foot deep. God, we can't drive up on a hill, open all the doors. I stayed up there for a couple hours. It was really bad. Let's see. Another one, we were, Rogers and I come over out of the woods over a hill and found a radar outfit out there. We drove in to take some shots, and guards come running out. We caught a couple of shots in the air over our heads.
They were pretty sensitive around radar facilities.
I ran some scuds. That was nasty. That's when I got the door on the officer side ripped off.
What'd you catch?
We ran three scuds, caught them going up Route 2 and turned off to one of the dwarfs. It was a major turnoff there. We'd gone up, you go up, Route 2 goes on north and you go off right and then you go back up in the woods. And there were some star targets up in there that we go to. We saw them, and that was with Fielder. So we got around them. We didn't run them. We got around them to the field, got into town, and sat on one of the side roads, photographed them going through the intersection with some light. And then he said, run them. I ran them, and you get to run them once. That's a freebie. They didn't see you. You get to run them once. I ran them the one time, went down into town, did the other thing, through the intersection, took some more shots. He said, run them again. And I said, okay, but we don't want to do it again. So we ran them again, got nasty. And I was right next to him. Right next to him. You know, if they would have come after me, I could have cut underneath the damn scud and gone off into the field. Then we got to the end of the town, and we stopped, and they came through again. And he said, run them again. And I said, you can't run them again. You got to let them go. And he said, no, run them again. So I did. And sure as shit, they were waiting for us. We ran the scuds. And up in front, they had some gauze and one of the smaller vehicles. Not a 375. I can't remember it. They were just laying the troops across the road. And when they come blowing by, a little bit of a curve, and they didn't know I was there. They thought I was farther back, so they weren't quite ready. One of the gauzes was off in the center of the road, facing me with the lights. And as I come around the scud, I dove to the left. He pulled left, and I dove way over to the right to the sidewalk. Went all the way over, got up on the sidewalk. He backed up all the way, and we're by this time we're probably maybe 100 feet from him. So I stayed on the sidewalk, and he stayed back there. And at the last second, I fake left, fake back right, and he didn't go for it, and I faded back left, and he pulled forward. He caught his bumper right behind the, right above the tire, mashed into the tire well, tore it all the way back into the door, grabbed the door up by the front frame there where the hinges are, ripped the door off the hinges, and pancaked it right into the post by the officer. When I looked back, I saw the gauze spin around and spin off the road back would be on my left with the headlights sticking up in the air. And as I looked in the rearview mirror, the officer wasn't saying anything. He was hanging on with his feet up on the dash. And, you know, I had to find out if he was okay, so I slapped him and said, you okay? And he looked at me with these big, goddamn eyes. He couldn't even talk. And in the rearview mirror, I could see these guys coming down on their knees with their AKs coming off their shoulders. And I went, oh, shit. So I shut the lights off and dove all the way over to the left. I headed to the right, shut the lights off, and so I was going to the light, to the right. Now, by this time, I'm a good, almost 100 yards away, because I'm booking. And then I dove back over to the left, cut through some trees, got up on the sidewalk, and was shooting down the sidewalk as fast as I could go. And to this day, I looked over to the officer and said, are you okay again, and asked him, and you could see tracers going down that street. So I went another couple hundred yards, until it went into the sidewalk ended and went into the field, and I dove back in between the trees, came around a turn, and went about 200 yards, and there was, it teed with an intersection, and there's a whole bunch of East German troops up there, because they got a column going up there. And the officer was just, he froze. He couldn't do anything. So I grabbed the microphone, and I was talking into the microphone as we blew through their intersection. And that got them all pissed off. And we drove right down into after that, we drove right down to the Potsdam to the bridge, and they let us through. We thought for sure we'd be stopped, but they let us through. But at that time, he got his himself back together. You can't really blame him. Yeah. In the motor pool, they wanted to see what was wrong with the door, so they undid the lock. It worked, and the door fell out.
Jeez. Did you have a picture of that?
Yeah. There's a picture of it. I think Stan's. There's a picture of it. One of them is the wheels crushed, I think, and I think Stan's got that one. Another time I was with Snyder, and we were ditching the BMWs. We're running down the country roads, blowing as fast as I can down this high crown cobblestone. And he's got the, I heard the tape later, and he's got the tape going. And you can hear, because of the shaking of the car off that cobblestone, he's going, and he's trying to talk. And he says, I know there's a road coming up here. We've got to cut through the field, you know. And he says, that road over there. So I slammed the brakes on, slid around, shot down this road. And the Beamers were 30 seconds behind us. I roared down across this field. And had a nice little road going down there where the farmers take their tractors down.
Mm-hmm.
You get into the field, and I go roaring into the field, and there's nothing but water come splashing up out of everywhere. We hydroplaned another 100 feet, and we were buried there all day. We tried to winch it out. I got pictures of that, I think, someplace. We tried to winch it out. We couldn't budge it. That was a nasty. That was one of the worst winchings that I think I've had. It was nasty. Really nasty. We got a farmer in his tractor, and we didn't think he was going to get us out. We had to winch as he pulled. And between our winching, him pulling, and keeping the tension on the car, you know how you step in mud with your shoe?
Mm-hmm.
And your shoe will come out? That's what happened to the car. It got sucked into there.
Oh, yeah.
Geistas, winching, gunshots, we've been there. You call it diving in the trash dumps for information. We call it shit diving. Rogers got in there one time. He said, I want you to take care of this. He got something that had all kinds of Russian writing on it. So he's got these rubber gloves. It's only got bare hands. He gives it to me. He says, take care of that. It's just covered in shit.
Yeah, probably one of their Pravda newspapers or something.
Yeah, he thought it was funny. You know, I just wanted to stick it in his ear.
Yeah.
We were able to... he was cool about that. He could laugh and... do stuff like that. Another time I was downrange with one of these morons. I had a lieutenant colonel. You never go downrange unless you check the flag. If they were active, they had the red flag up. And he said, I didn't hear anything. I said, I don't care. You check the flag. No, we're okay. So we're downrange coming up to the target area from behind it. And we're in this little gully where the, you know how the tanks cut through gullies and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm winding my way down there, and he says, get out and go find out how far we are. And I know we're within, 300-400 feet of the downrange. And I crawl up this bank, and I'm about 20 foot away. No, I'm probably about 10 feet high, 12 feet high, and about 20 to 25, maybe 30 feet away from the car. And I got enough sense to know it's downrange, so I'm on my knee looking around, and all of a sudden, there's this huge racket, and limbs start dropping on me from the trees above me.
Oh, God.
So I leaped off the bank, slammed onto the front of the car, and actually bruised my stomach. And he was going, what's wrong, what's wrong? And he shut up. And some branches started falling on the car, and he shut up, and we were able to get out of there.
Oh, were they shooting high?
Yeah, I don't know what they were doing, but thank God they were. If they were shooting at low targets, the fatigues I had on would have not been washable.
Yeah.
It was stunk. Yeah, I don't know. We can just go on and on.
It sounds like you got into some pretty good stuff.
Oh, yeah. It was just Stan and I from the house. We had Pop Clausen was saying we were bored. We'd seen the movies I don't know how many times. And he said, why don't you guys go over and have a beer? Okay. So we went out and got the little boat they had there in the Pasta House.
Yeah.
We rode across the lake. You know, as you go out to Potsdam House, you go back in towards Potsdam, you cross the little bridge there.
Right.
And there's a little guest house right there on the left.
Huh.
Outdoor never, seating and everything.
Never paid attention to it.
Well, we went over there and rode up to the dock, tied the boat up, went walking in, and there was at least a dozen Russians and a couple officers and some old World War II type hard-nosed NCOs. And, we had the money, so we bought everybody a beer, and it probably made everybody happy. And then the Russian officer, this lieutenant, he had to show the Americans how much he could drink, and we ended up with like 8 or 9 beers and 8 or 9 shots of vodka or schnapps in front of us. And we went through all of that, plus more. The Russians were circling around us, and the East Germans that were there, they got up and came up behind us and sat behind us, and they wouldn't let the Russians sit behind us. I thought that was pretty cool. Hmm. But you know the attitude of the East Germans against and the Russians. They hated them.
Yeah.
So they took care of our back, and we persuaded to drink. And Stan and this Russian lieutenant, they put their mouth over the shot glasses and drank them. You've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
And then down the beer. And me and this NCO sitting across from me, he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. He's an old grizzly old guy, and he's looking at me and smiles. He says, "You ain't going to keep up with me, you little imperialist punk." So we started laughing at each other. It's amazing alcohol and how you can start talking any language.
Yeah. Almost like talking in tongues.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I got that message.
Yeah. So him and I had a great time. We were... He poured his schnapps out of the ground, and I said, "Okay, you know." So I poured mine out, and then I got a tap on the back from one of the East Germans. I just started passing it back to the East Germans, and he started passing it back to his troops. And we let the lieutenant and Stan go at it. And the Russian lieutenant or captain, whatever the hell he was gone. He was going to be hungover for a week or two. But we had a good time. We were singing songs and didn't know what the hell we were singing, didn't know what the hell we were saying. We had a hell of a good time. And time to go, we went down to the little pier there, and then you had to crawl down the ladder about 6 feet down to the boat. One of the Russian guys went down there, and he bent over to grab the boat for the rope on the boat to pull the little boat up. He fell into the lake.
Oh, my God.
So a couple other guys jumped in to help him, and they're all, you know, like 30 sheets to the wind. And then the guys got in, the Russians got in the boat, and they helped me and Stan down the ladder because I damn near fell off.
Was this at night or dark, or was it still
late? Yeah, yeah. All you had was a little bit of light from the little ghost house there.
Hmm.
And we weren't supposed to do this at all. Hmm. Nobody ever found out about it. Because, you know, you could have a beer, but if you got drunk... It was nasty. They'd take you off the road.
Hmm.
We didn't really care about it. We were so drunk. So we're in the boat, and the Russians are singing and saying bye, you know, and all this bullshit. And we're yelling bye and singing songs. And Stan and I are just rowing away. And pretty soon we notice the Russians and the East Germans are up there on the dock just laughing their ass off. They're having a great time. Nobody untied the rope.
You weren't making too much progress.
We weren't going nowhere. So we finally, you know, one of the Russians, I think they were supposed to untie it, and I didn't pay any attention to it, neither did Stan, so just to make sure. But it was funny. We laughed our ass off at that. And everybody brought another beer, so we had another beer laughing at that one. So we finally got the rope undone, and everybody's singing songs and doing the old glad having back slapping routine again. So we're rowing away, and pretty soon, you know, we're gone. And we're out in the middle of this dark lake, and if we roll the wrong direction, we're rolling into the border.
Yeah.
And we're going, holy shit. The drunkard's a skunk, man. And we're going, okay, you know, we're trying, both of us are sitting there looking at each other, and each of us have got an oar, and we're rowing away, but we're rowing the wrong direction. All we're doing is going in a circle. And Stan finally says, "I've seen that light over there too many times." So then we finally got sitting next to each other and rode over, and we hear this, "Over here, over here." And Pop Possum, who was scared to death something had happened to us. he's out on the dock at the Potsdam House with his little Zippo lighter, moving the flame up and down, trying to get our attention, because we were like 20 feet from him, and we couldn't see him. So we went in there, and we had a good time with that one. That was fun. And then we stole a colored sign out of the big brick Russian barracks that you drive by on the way to the house.
Yeah.
As you come down the street from Potsdam, it makes a gradual right-hand turn, and then you go down in front of the brick buildings.
Right, which are no longer there.
Yeah, they're gone now. But as you come down that street before you make the turn, you used to look right straight down into the Russian motor pool.
Mm-hmm.
And right there at that little road there, because they come off the road that you're on and drive down into the motor pool, they had a big colored sign, and I think you've probably seen the picture of it. And everybody talked about stealing that sign. So one night, Don Thomas picked Stan and I up at the bridge, and we're coming back, and we're saying, is this the night? It is. You know, Don's driving, and we got the station wagon, and Stan's in the right front passenger, and I'm in the back seat. And we say, okay, as we're driving out there, what we're going to do is, just Stan, you run around, you grab the top of the sign, I'm going to get out. Dave, I'm going to get out, and I'll open the back as you get out of the car and run around and grab the top of the sign, then I'll grab the bottom of the sign, and we'll both jerk at the count of three. Well, I went out the back, opened up the back so we could throw the sign in. Just as I get up to the sign to grab a hold of it, Stan says, hell with this nose. He grabs the top of the sign and jerks it. Well, the post was routed at the bottom. And the whole goddamn sign, post, and stand come down on top of me. So he gets up and runs, and I'm seeing stars going, what the hell happened, you know? And Don's going, go, 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 and Stan's jumping in the car. And I'm dragging the sign, trying to put it in the stand. As he comes back and grabs the post, we throw it in there. He jumps in the car and tells Don, take off, and Don takes off, and I just got my hands on the back end of the car, the gate on the station wagon, and I'm dragging along the street. And he just hadn't quite got fast enough, and I jump up on the bumper, and I, you son of a bitch, stop, and he stops, and naturally, when you're on the back like that, it just threw me into the car. So we got the sign sticking out the back of the car, the glass window flopping up and down. My feet are hanging out back over the tailgate, and I'm slamming. I slammed into the sign in the back of the seat in the station wagon, and they took off for home.
You didn't tour in that wagon, did you?
No, huh? No, that was just a house car.
Uh-huh.
It was supposed to be an ambulance.
I see.
Well, that's something else. They had a sign. They had the European doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo siren on it.
Oh yeah.
We used to turn that on in West Berlin all the time.
Oh, jeez. Get traffic to pull over?
Yeah.
What traffic jam?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sunday afternoon, all the Germans in Berlin are out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And going out to the bridge or driving through the woods where they go. And we turn that sucker on. They just open up. We just go blasting down through the traffic.
Oh, my.
I don't know how we didn't get in trouble for that.
Yeah, sounds like you should have.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I got all kinds of stuff. Opal writing a ticket, and I tore it up, threw it at him.
Yeah, you could get away with that. You know, August of 74, we recognized the German Democratic Republic, so we had to start treating them completely different after that.
Yeah.
You know, which was only several months for me before I left, you know, that. But, it was free-for-all prior to that, and then the word came down. You know, we set up embassy in, I guess, in East Berlin or whatever. We had diplomatic relations with them.
And so
we couldn't, things kind of, I think, toned down considerably after that as far as the way we treated them.
Well, I heard that. I went, oh, man, there it goes, out the window. Could have been toned down, and they, you know, it probably didn't get that bad then.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't know, and I've never really talked to anybody after, too much later after me, that I haven't talked to him yet to find out what it was like. But I will.
I blew two tires outside of some little door, and the two tires we had in the back were flat.
Wow.
So I had to flag some guy down, and a bunch of them, just they were afraid to stop. Some guy, some older guy stopped one time in a little Trabant. Told him what the problem was, and he threw the tires in the back, and I got in the front, and we took off, and as he cut through the woods, and I'm, you know, I'm sitting on the passenger side with my switchblade in my hand. He didn't see it, but he's cutting through the woods. Why?
Yeah.
And he finally got across to me. He's cutting into to a dwarf, and I find out when we got there, I found out it was his brother that had a tire shop.
Oh.
Gas station thing.
Handy.
But to go through town, he stopped in the woods and told me to get in the back, and he put the tires up on top of it.
Yeah, didn't want to see you.
Yeah. So he, you know, and he took me in the back, and they opened the thing up. And when I got out of the car, his brother's eyes, his mouth fell open, and his eyes lit up and went, oh, my God, you know, and everybody was running everywhere. And I just started pulling cigarettes and candy bars and money out of my pockets, and they didn't want it. We'll do it for you for free. I said, come on. You know, I understand that. So they loaded me back up. They fixed the tires, loaded me back up underneath the tires. And believe me, traveling in the backseat of a Wartburg with tires on you is not something you want to do.
No.
They don't have shocks.
They don't have much.
Oh, God. It was, yeah. But it was, you know, it's a story somebody doing. I used to take in, Major Stein. Major Stein and I are blowing down the Dresden Autobahn, tootling along, and this is when Czechoslovakia is recalling all its diplomats. We blow by this car, a West German car, that any American would have driven, and it's got the green USA plates on it. And he says, stop, turn around, let's go back, because we figured some American got all screwed up on his directions and got off on the wrong Autobahn.
Mm-hmm.
So we came back and pulled him over, and Stein talked to him, and he was a Czech diplomat working in their embassy, and he was recalled home, and Stein said the guy was scared shitless, and you can understand why. I mean, half the people who were called back went to jail, I guess.
What's he in a green-plated car for?
Well, that's where I'm getting to.
Okay.
So we took a picture of it, and Stein wrote it up. And we found out later, after World War II, when we established and everybody was friendly, the governments were given USA plates so they wouldn't be hassled by the West Germans and all of that stuff. And they were accredited. And you could come in. There was no food except on the U.S. military bases. And they, being diplomats, you were allowed the diplomatic corps. They gave them USA plates. And you could go anywhere you want. Now, business since World War II. Nobody recognized this. Nobody saw it until we just stumbled onto it. That meant all these communist countries, which were almost every one of them, had USA plates. And they could go on to any base anywhere in West Germany without being questioned.
Really? They didn't even have to show ID?
They didn't. They just wave them through. They had USA plates. As far as they knew, they were American GIs.
Huh.
And that was a big stink.
Oh, yeah.
A big stink. They went nuts tracing this stuff down. I heard that they were stopping cars and doing everything they could to trace this stuff down and get them back until they can't use them anymore for obvious reasons.
No expiration date, huh?
There probably was, but nobody paid any attention to the thing.
Oh.
Great security, huh?
Uh-huh.
We had another major that was in, he was a lieutenant, first lieutenant about 5, 6 years, 10 years in West Germany before. Revell, well, you can date it by the models, but Revell came out with a model of the U.S. nuclear submarine. And you know how they build these models to a quarter-inch scale or, you know, one-tenth of a scale or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're highly detailed. They're so detailed, in fact, that he was with a team that stumbled onto this because they were watching some Russian diplomats. And he was following them. They went into the PX, bought a dozen of this stuff, plus aircraft, tanks, all the models that Revell had, because they'd get a shipment in every few weeks or month. And they stopped them at the door and said, what are you doing? you can't do anything because we have access to the PX. And he said there was a big stink. They wouldn't let them have the model because they realized that they could take the models back and build a full-scale model of all this stuff, which is highly detailed. Talk about an intelligence coup off of a little model that you make at home.
Huh.
He said they had a shit fit. And that's when they... there were never any models in the PX there in Berlin that I remember. And because I went in and looked, and he said, you know, you go look, they won't have anything. They had cars and tractors, you know, and stuff like that, but no military equipment because they wouldn't allow the Russians to have it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Never heard that story.
No, I couldn't believe it. But if you think about it, damn, it's a big gift to them.
Sure. Yeah, it's as naive as, you know, us getting to go through their garbage and find things. You know? I mean, you don't think about it, it's crap, you throw it out, or you don't think about it, it's a toy, it's sitting on a shelf, but it's all the same stuff, I guess.
Well, the nice thing about going through the garbage is we just threw it into a bag, and they'd ship it to the States. You guys deal with the smelly crap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I kind of blew through the list.
Well, I think we got some good stuff.
There's busting through a fence. We got trapped inside a Soviet concern. Came in the back way from their training area. There's no fence there. We drove in early in the morning, and, oh, man. Of all the days in the year to have a training alert, we thought they were after us. These guys come pouring out all these barracks, the vehicles are starting up, and we're hiding in between these two barracks and a couple of cars, and we only got 40 feet maybe to go to get out of the damn concern. And they're just roaring out into the training area. They had an alert.
Huh.
We didn't know it. We were shitting and kidding. I think the upholstery in that car was ruined for a while. But anyway, the only way to get out, because there were so many of them going out the way we came in, that the only way for me to get out is they had a wooden fence, and I had to bust through that.
Oh.
That was fun.
Sounds like it.
Anyway, you got enough, I guess.
I think we did pretty good, Dave. And, you know, if you think of anything else that's exciting or whatever, give me a call, and, you know, I'm going to be adding to this thing up through at least the first part of March before I'm going to try and
call it off.
Try and assimilate everything that I've got so far. I mean, you could probably go on for a year and do this, but I really would like to just get it together and wrapped up, you know, get it out there.
Yeah. It becomes a chore after a while.
Yeah, I'm going to send these things. The Military History Institute will probably want a set of them, because they're big into collecting this kind of thing for posterity.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I emailed them, but I haven't heard back. I just sent it a couple days ago, sent a link to the documentary so they can watch it, and told them what I was doing. And I said, you know, before I release this to the public, probably somebody ought to go through and listen and make sure there's nothing sensitive. But I think everything has pretty much been declassified by now, anything that's going to come up on these tapes anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the unit histories in their entirety are all unclassified, so I just can't imagine anything. Although Ed Corcoran said something, you know, that there may still be elements of, you know, if anything's said about, you know, agencies that we sent stuff to or work for or whatever. But even that, I just can't see as, you know, 30 years ago as being sensitive. Although, you know, somebody's going to be talking from the late 80s, and that's not... You know, I'll eventually get them.
Probably if they said just send it back to the States and let them deal with it, like I just said, you know, maybe that'd be okay.
Yeah.
Because we had, you could go in and ask, where does this stuff go, when they'd tell you.
Yeah.
Downstairs, and I just thought that was kind of stupid. Mm-hmm. I'll just give it to you and you deal with it. You know, don't tell me about it. Because I'm not, waterboarding? All right, I'll sing like a canary, I'll tell you.
Oh, my. Okay, well, I'm going to wrap this up then, and I still need to get with your boy and try and figure out something that we can do there collaboratively.
Think the History Channel is going to be interested?
Well, you never know. You know, yeah. I mean, it's out there, and I haven't formally approached them yet. I'm thinking that maybe they'll find out and come to me, you know. But the main thing that I wanted to do was get it together for all of us, you know, for all of the people who were there and their families and friends, and, you know, have something. I wasn't as concerned about, you know, having it on broadcast on television, although if that happens, it's fine, you know. But
somebody from there would probably pick it up out of the archives and do it their way.
Yeah.
You know, somebody with a big ego, and, well, I don't want to talk to them, I'll do it.
Right.
Yeah, I think you've got a lot of work, I think you ought to get credit for it.
Yeah.
I used to take smuggle books that were books and newspapers and magazines in these Potsdam. That I never said anything about, because I was told directly, you know, you can't do that.
Take them in or out?
Take them in.
Uh-huh.
I pick up newspapers and magazines off of, you know, the little coffee houses.
Yeah.
They're always laying all over the place. People read them and leave them there, and I'd pick them up, and I'd take them into Potsdam and leave them off in corners. I'd find paperback books. I'd drop them off.
Hmm.
Always took books and stuff like that. Anything that was German from West Berlin, you know, that I thought they'd enjoy, I'd drop it off.
Yeah, that's a nice thought. You know, that's something I never thought about doing, but it makes sense to try and be as subversive as you can, you know.
I mean, yeah, you're the enemy. Yeah, I'm straight. One of the biggest things is there was a girl there named Karen, and she was a younger girl, and she was into the Beatles and the Stones and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'd give her records. And you'd think she was having an orgasm.
Yeah.
My God, it was incredible. And she'd tell us about how they'd have parties at her place, but they couldn't play the music loud.
Right.
And they knew who the plants were in their little youth group,
mm-hmm.
their little group of friends and stuff, and who the plants were. And they'd play the sanctioned music. And then as the plants left to go home, then they'd bring out the records. And they'd play them low so nobody could hear them outside the house. And she said, we'd dance all night.
I'll be darned. Interesting.
Hey, more power to you.
Yeah.
Anything to support. She almost died. She had a little child. And Steve Epic, who spoke fluent German, took her some flowers and some other stuff for her baby that we'd all chipped in to get. And he walks into her room, and it stunk something horrid. And he knew right away what it was. And I don't remember if he had gotten samples, because she had a C-section, I think it was, and it was pussy. And I don't recall whether he got samples, took it into the Berlin hospital and said, hey, what is this stuff, and explained it to him, because then he'd have to expose himself. But he went back out with some meds, and he raised holy hell in their hospital.
Wow.
He almost got clobbered in the hospital.
Interesting.
Yeah, as I understand it, Stegner, I think, might know more about that.
I'll make a note and ask him.
Yeah, because it seemed to me like Steve gave her brought some meds and gave her some medicine, and it helped. And after he started raising hell, they started giving her some meds, too. I don't recall. I know he raised hell and probably saved her life.
Hmm.
That was one of my biggest fears, is getting hurt and going to one of their hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
I'll make a note, ask him about Karen's baby, Karen and her baby.
Steve Epic saving Karen and the baby. Or at least Karen, the baby was okay, it lived. I've got a picture of her and the baby. As far as I know, she lives. Or the baby lives. But she was back in the house working. So... But I know Steve probably could be credited with saving your life. Because those stupid bastards and that...
This is Steve who?
Epic.
Epic?
Yeah.
Is he still around?
Donald. Huh?
Is he still around?
No. Steve died.
Did he?
Yeah, I just found that out. John knows all this Steve story. He was AIDS.
Hmm.
He was in San Francisco, and I wish I would have known. Steve was a good man. He was a good man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't care. Don't care what his lifestyle was. He was
right.
A good man.
Right. Well, David, I'm going to wrap this up and...
Yeah, it's late back there. So.
I'll send you... Yeah, it's 11:30. I'm going to send you a link to Skype so you can check that out and maybe get it installed. And like I said, put it on your computer. And then my ID, all you got to do is type in, I think, my name. But it's Cold War Spy is what I use for my Skype ID. So,
War Spy?
Cold War Spy, one word.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
And you just put that in there and it'll show you anytime that I'm online that I've got the thing on. And likewise, you can... You know, send me your ID once you get set up, and I can put it in mine as a contact. So
it's very unique. People just don't believe it.
Yeah. Okay, bud. Right. Take her easy. Thanks a lot.
Talk later. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.